and welcome to episode 92. Yes, 92 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mask from Mars, and this week I'm joined by comic artist, writer, and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Writer, Down the Tubes contributor, and our very own Magnum PI, Tony Esmond.
You're getting really smooth at this, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm really impressed with you.
I am. All right, yeah. I'll put the outtake in afterwards, all right. And this week, we're also joined by the creator of the badass comic book Monstrosity. He's also a contributor to the awesome weekly comic The Phoenix, and he's an all-round top chap. It's Zach Simmons-Hearn.
Hello.
Hi, Zach.
Hello. Hey, you all right, guys?
All good, yeah.
We are good. For those listeners who don't know the behind the scenes, we've been talking for the past 10 minutes, and Zach's painfully aware of how bad I am at doing the intros.
Yeah, masterful. Smooth.
92 episodes. I still can't believe we're still...
Plus, we've got... How many specials we've done? 3 or 4, haven't we, I suppose?
Yeah, I think so. I think.
Are we celebrating when we hit 100, or are we going to add the specials to the number? What are we going to do?
No, I think it's when we do the individual episode 100. It has
okay,
to, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the number will show up when
it... I don't know what we're going to... Yeah, we've got to do some kind of special show, haven't we?
Just do we'll do a clips episode that we give to you,
yeah,
Vince.
Yeah, like the last episode of Star Trek Next Generation 6-1, which... what the fuck's this? I've seen all this before.
Dan Butcher. you know... Look, we're not in the same room, but you know the look I'm giving you right now, don't you?
Remember when we spoke about this, and then you can do like a rewind sound effect of like tape and then play the clip.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Did you want some music for each different segment as well?
Yeah,
sure.
Bastards,
and a guest presenter for each bit.
Oh dear. Well, I'm not putting that idea out to the listeners because they'll obviously want it. Cause...
They love it.
Yeah. Who loves hard work more than me? Anyway, but we're kicking off a very special month here on the Awesome Comics Podcast. Yes, it's a bunch of shows dedicated to us talking about like specific genres of comics that we all know and love. We just decided to do something different. So that's how we roll. And we've got a few cool topics lined up for the next... April's got 5 weeks in it, so there's going to be 5 shows like dedicated to genres. Yeah, so you're going to have to do your research, boys. Well,
okay.
Tony
yeah, that's fine.
Tony doesn't need to, because he knows everything about comics. It's me and
I like research.
Yeah. Only means
I like to point out... I like reading comics. Can I point out at this early stage that I am on an awful lot of weird pain medicine? So if I come across even more unusually weird this episode, that's the reason.
Yeah.
Okay. So look forward to that, folks, because it's going to be a good one. No. Tony, bless him, is with us through hell and high water, and a lot
That's it. I'd do anything to beer, you know that. If it wasn't for Zach, I'd be a fucking tool.
Yes, but it's going to be a good
one. Well, well done.
Yeah. But this week, we're kicking off Genre Month. I was trying to think of a cool name for April, but there's no cool way to talk about, you know.
We could have a competition around that, can we?
Yeah.
Oh, we could. Oh,
win a certain prize.
Yeah. We're going to have a competition this week, folks, and it's a really, really cool one. So stay tuned for that later. But before that, let's kick off with this week's topic. We're talking about giant monsters. I should put a sound effect in now, shouldn't I? Of like Godzilla screaming.
I endorse this.
Just for that, I'm not going to do it.
That was a great sound effect you just put in there, Vince. Really nice.
Dan, do your best Godzilla roar. Go on.
Oh, God, I can't.
Yay, go on.
Oh, I can't do that. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Anyone?
What about Godzuki?
Go on. Do it, Tony.
No, don't bully me into it. I feel bad enough. I'm not worried. He's picking on the disabled.
Oh, 5 minutes in. Bloody hell. Anyway, there's going to be no impressions this week. But giant monsters, we all love them. From the likes of Fin Fang... How do you say it? Fin Fan Foom?
Is it
Fin Fan or is it Fin Fang?
I think it's
fang.
Teeth, yeah.
It is a fang, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
that green one with the purple pants. Galactus, you know, there's King Kong or the mighty Godzilla, like huge creatures capable of leveling cities and causing chaos. They've always been a go-to creation for comics. You know, every week you'll see loads of them. And they seem to be quite popular at the moment. There seems to be a few, I don't know, popping up in cinemas. You know?
Yeah.
Although I haven't seen the latest King Kong film.
No, I haven't. I want to see it, though. I do want to see it.
Has anyone here seen that?
Nope. I've not heard, like, rave reviews, but, yeah.
It looks like fun cinema times.
And allegedly, the next one, he fights Godzilla, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that's the setup.
I think they're doing Godzilla 2, and then it's going to tie into King Kong versus Godzilla. Which happens to be a question that we asked the listeners this week. So, let's see what everyone thought of that. Yeah, but giant monsters, even the first ever issue of Fantastic Four had the battling a giant beast emerging from the earth. Isn't that right, Tony?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's loads through the Silver Age and Bronze Age, aren't there? I made a little list of ones I liked as I grew up. Yeah. And you had stuff like Shogun Warriors, if everyone remembers them.
Yeah.
Devil Dinosaur.
Yeah.
You had Red Ronin, which was in the Avengers. I'm not sure what he'd been in before that, but something, I think. And then the Hulk books, the Herb Trimpey, John Severin drawn Hulk book at the time had Wendigo, Rhino, the Gremlin, the Abomination. And then you also had things like Man-Thing and Swamp-Thing. You know, there's loads of stuff, wasn't there? Going on back then. I think we're reaching a resurgence like that again now, I think.
Dragon Man was always a weird one.
Yeah.
That was very odd. I mean, like, some of that stuff, people wouldn't make those kind of characters nowadays. I think it was like a robot, and then like it got sentient, and then, okay, it's a big purple dragon wearing red pants. Okay.
And it wears glasses. It came back in the... is it the James Robinson Fantastic Four? I think it came back in that, didn't it? And it was a sort of babysitter, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Here's a question. For instance, if you've got a Mecha Godzilla type thing, or a giant robot type monster, do you consider that to be a monster or more a giant robot?
I don't know, actually. Interesting.
I ask the difficult questions on this show.
If it was going up, if it's the kind of like... I was going to say, if it's a kind of monster-like thing and it's robot, I'd class it as a monster. But then if you go to like the Power Rangers stuff with their Zords, I would class them as robots. So
if it sort of had its own mind and it was sort of bashing buildings down and wandering around, I'd say monster. But if it's controlled by humans, I'd say, mecha type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got like... you might have a bit more knowledge on this, Zach, than maybe the three of us, but kind of like anime and manga, kind of like large robots and massive.
Sure,
go for it.
Sorry. I was going to say, like what one of the shows I love is like Neon Genesis Evangelion. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's all sort of giant robots fighting giant monsters called angels. But I think the robots themselves have kind of, they've got it's been a while since I've watched it, but I think they're kind of partly genetically engineered angels as well, so they're almost monsters as well. They've kind of got their own they can sort of think for themselves, I think, to some degree. Kind of strained by the people. So
do you think giant monsters are more prevalent in Eastern comics than in like Western sort of culture?
Yeah,
as soon as you mentioned that one, I immediately thought of like the more recent one, Attack on Titan?
Titan, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I still haven't seen anything about.
No.
But whenever I hear descriptions of it, I always think, God, that sounds grim.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does look grim, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't kind of Godzilla a metaphor for the bomb dropped on Hiroshima?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a national way of, I don't know.
As was the Hulk, I suppose, in a way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A kind of reaction to it.
Yeah. Well, he's one of Marvel's characters which skirts closest to monsters, doesn't he, really?
Especially on certain runs where all he did was fight a different monster every week, you know, a different sort of cunningly disguised version of another monster, you know. Yeah, I think so. What got you into the sort of the whole monster thing, Zach?
I think I've always just loved monsters as a kid. I just think they're kind of just something cool about them. I think the fact that they can just look like anything, they can just be fearsome beasts, and drawing them, you don't have to sort of, I don't know, it's not with people where, you know, you've got two arms, two legs and a head. With a monster, you can just go nuts with it.
So you don't get the folds in their suit right, do you, with a monster, I suppose, you know?
Yeah. I think there's just something cool about just, you know, you can always come up with a totally new monster anytime. And that's why I think watching them on TV and cartoons and in comics and stuff, that's what's kind of cool. When you see a new monster that's not like when you've seen before, I think that's I don't know. Well, as a kid, that always excited me.
Yeah, definitely.
What sort of stuff influenced you, Zach? What sort of stuff were you watching or reading?
Well, I don't know. As like a really young kid, it was all like dinosaurs and things like that that I loved. But yeah. I think getting older, more manga and anime and things like that, really. But yeah, like I said, stuff like Evangelion, I loved. Although the monsters in that aren't really kind of freaky monsters or anything like that. They're not like sort of slimy beasts. They're quite slick looking things.
How freaky do you like your monsters?
Back to Barney.
Perfect question. I don't know. I think it really depends on what it's for. Because like with Evangelion, the monsters are really slick looking. But I also love stuff like Berserk, which I know Dan's talked about in the past. Yep,
big fan of that.
God, yeah, the monsters in that are just disgusting. They're just absolutely repulsive, like real freaky things. And yeah. I love that because the designs are just so just off the wall.
Very inventive, very creative. I can never remember the author's name, but he seems to have kind of boundless depths of his imagination to conjure up these horrific creatures. There is a certain part in Berserk where they kind of go into kind of like a hell like state and everything's these horrid monsters, and they're all really well done.
Yeah
There's a lot of Japanese and like Eastern comics when they sort of plumb the depths of darkness, you see some, you know, that's some of the most disturbing stuff that I've seen.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. And that even like filters through to like the anime, doesn't it? Like some of the animated films are just absolutely twisted. in a good way, if you like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, have you guys read much of Junji Ito's horror stuff?
It's not so much a tiny bit. We've heard a lot about it recently. Yeah.
There was when we had what episode was it? But
did Jay Gunn mentioned him?
I think so. Yeah, because and a lot of people, I think our last horror talk, like, was there a comic that genuinely creeped you out? And that was one where, was it him that we got recommended one, and there was like this mountain that had these human shapes in them, like carved into them. And lots of short stories.
Yeah,
genuinely creepy and very, very effective.
He's
a name I do hear quite a lot, and whenever I've seen bits of artwork, I can see why that genuinely disturbs people.
Yeah. No, I think the one you're talking about was it The Enigma of Amagara Fault?
Yes.
I think that's... I love that one.
Did you send me that link? Were you
I think I sent you that link as well, but I think a few people sent it to you by the sounds of it. I think it came up a lot, because it's a really creepy, sort of disturbing concept, isn't it? That you sort of have these human-shaped holes that you sort of disappear into, and they slowly twist you out of... Right, yeah. But you did this other series called... he's done a lot of series, but one that I love called Gyo, just G-Y-O it's spelled, about these weird sort of parasitic creatures that come out of the sea that basically attach themselves to all the sea creatures, like dead sea creatures. So you get like fish coming up scuttling on like little creepy spider legs out of the sea, and then you just more and more of them keep coming until there's hordes of them. And you start getting sharks, and they're rotting basically, so they've got the stench of dead fish fill the air. That's these sort of dead fish with weird spidery legs
that
sticking out from
awesome.
The street.
Yeah,
it's bananas. It's absolutely mental, but it's well worth a read.
I've written that one down.
That sounds brilliant. Awesome. Yeah,
sounds good.
I need to read more manga. I don't read enough, I think. You know, but when you think there's loads of stuff in manga that, I mean, I was thinking about Ninja Scroll when you're talking about that, and even that's got a sort of huge sort of creature, wooden creature that fights them, isn't it?
Yeah. Ninja Scroll's so good. Yeah, I was talking to Chris Ember about that this week, actually.
It's really kicked off a lot of people's kind of a lot of people will cite that as kind of a favourite.
Yeah I think it's my favourite sort of manga animation as well, Ninja Scroll. Anyway, what we I love our tangents. But let's bring it back to giant monsters. Now, Zach, I know the first page of your comic, you've got your main character and there's a huge monster in the background. Before we sort of do a bit of a flashback and you're building up to that sort of craziness. And I myself also used a giant monster within the first couple of pages. Because I think giant monsters are always a good attention grabber, aren't they?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of independent comics and small press in general, do you think we see enough of them? Do you think they're used enough?
I don't know, really. I think from a lot of the small press that I've read, there seems to be less of the action stuff and stuff that involves fighting monsters and things like that. I think there definitely is like a section of small press where that is the case and where you do get that sort of comic. But I think for the most part, it seems to be more sort of commercial stuff that, you know, you get monsters, unless they're getting really specific or dark and disturbing, in which case you can do that in the comics quite well. But sort of big, broad monsters smashing up cities and things like that seems to be more on sort of commercial things like big publishers.
Yeah. I think when it comes to the other publishers as well, I seem to see it not necessarily in the big two so much, but I'll certainly see more. I'm a little more likely to see a giant monster comic in the likes of Boom or IDW. Or there always seems to be those sort of like books. Like, is it Enormous is one of them that was talked about this week? I think that's a Boom comic. And certainly, I think Steve Niles did that giant monster. I think that must have been IDW. I never read that one. But
Marvel have just done that mini, haven't they? Is it Creatures Unleashed? I can't even think of the name of it now.
Yeah, no, it's Monsters Unleashed, isn't it?
Monsters Unleashed, pardon me. Yeah, and that's getting a rollout, isn't it, into a bigger series?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is
at the moment? That do you think Marvel are just tapping into that the giant, because we've had it over the past few years, whether it be Godzilla, Pacific Rim. God, I love Pacific Rim. or just, you know, there's definitely, people are more open to giant monster movies because we didn't have any for years and years, did we?
I think anime and manga was a very much a niche thing for many years, wasn't it? So many things are taking, I mean, you only got to look at Ghost in the Shell's come out this week, haven't you? Many things are taking an influence from it because it's a rich mine of imagination, isn't it, these days, and of storylines. And I think that's where that new Marvel series has come from. You know, it's given it a little bit of a kick again, maybe, you know, there's that little match to a fire, isn't there, occasionally? That's all it takes.
Yeah.
And it sticks something back up above the parapet and we get a few of them, then it'll disappear again for a while, you know?
It's almost like the evolution of the dinosaur. Well, I mean, obviously, follow me on this one, but there seems to be like, a few years ago, dinosaurs were a slightly bigger thing. I know certainly we had them in, the one that Mark Lamming did? I've forgotten it now. Planet Hulk.
Yeah.
Was it Planet Hulk?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Of course, we had Devil Dinosaur, who's now become a thing, and you saw a lot more of it. And now Marvel are now tapping into the other creatures. Like, I'm sure Fing Fang Foom is going to be probably everywhere.
I think you've got to look at Groot as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Groot's a huge influence in the Guardians of the Galaxy universe. It does have those sort of monstrous alien stroke creatures in them, don't they, you know?
Yeah. What do you look for? Here we go. Prepare yourself, folks. Dan, Tony, and Zach. When it comes to giant monsters, what do you look for?
If anyone says one eye, straight away.
I tell you what, the best monster we keep on talking about this book, but Surface Tension, creatures in that, because they've kind of got a grounding in reality. When someone does a design and there's kind of, you can see recognizable traits from creatures from around the world, it makes it so much more real for me and kind of believable. Sure, I love the kind of stuff that's completely wacky and out there, but when kind of it's taken a little bit more realistically, it's an approach I really like.
Yeah. When you see a bit of a hint of the real world within that sort of like, that sort of crazy monster design, it's always sort of scarier, isn't it? I think.
Especially when there's sort of some little bit of understanding of biology. So you look at it and you think, I can see how this would work in a way.
Yeah.
Well, I think when you start looking into it, they're everywhere, though, aren't they? When you look into the world's two most popular television series, The Walking Dead, let's face it, zombies are monsters, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then you've got Game of Thrones, which is full of fucking dragons or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
So and zombies.
And zombies, yeah. And all sorts of big dogs and all that, wolves and all this sort of thing. You know, and I think it's when you start examining it, it's probably pretty much been there, you know, with a few sort of exceptions, pretty much most of the time.
Yeah.
But occasionally that sort of zeitgeist zips its way into comics and everyone in comics goes nuts. You know, and we get some great stuff like some of the Godzilla comics that have been about recently.
Yeah.
You know, and then it will disappear for a while again, won't it? You know.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like you've done in Monstrosity, Zach, with Daigo, and he's got the kind of the monstrous arm. It's kind of, it's a good metaphor and a good way of showing, so it's, there's a corruption, or kind of the monsters completely of, not of this world, and totally evil and messed up. Is that kind of, look, the thing you approached it with, the character? I've only got to issue two, so there's not too much explained about the arm yet.
Sure, yeah. That was one of the things I really wanted to get, is just like how, basically how scary it would be if you weren't in control of your own body. Having something sort of creeping through you and taking over you in like a way. I always thought that would just be quite a disturbing sort of thing. Obviously it's done with a bit more of a cartoony sort of look, but
yeah,
you've
injected a real sort of sense of fun into it.
Yeah, I've tried to, because I just wanted to get a bit of both of those things. One, like how it would actually be to experience that, and also, on the other hand, just also being able to cut loose with some over-the-top scenes and things like that.
It's good. I guess you don't want to go full sort of Cronenberg body horror, kind of
no.
Turn into something else, but it's done really well. I mean, one of the great things, there's many great things to like about the comic, but the action sequences, it's so well done. Like, they're very reminiscent of kind of an Eastern style, with the kind of the blood fighting and the limbs and everything a bit over the top. I loved it. Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, nice one. Thanks, man.
for those who don't know about Monstrosity, there's a reason we put Zach on. His comic book is called Monstrosity. For those who haven't picked up an issue, and you really should, what is it actually about?
Okay, yeah, well, Monstrosity, do you want the pitch?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while.
The main character, Daigo, has basically been granted incredible power in the form of a demon that now possesses his arm. Him and his best friend Joe live in a city called Beheroth, which is hidden and shielded from the rest of the world due to some war in the past that, you know, that's going to be explored in future issues. But basically now he's stuck with this demon in his arm, and there's two factions within the city, a street gang called the Venge Trolls, and also a clan of demon hunting ninja, who are both trying to get hold of Daigo because of the demon that's inside of him. So he's like a normal guy thrust into an impossible situation, just trying to survive. And the only person he can really turn to is his buddy Joe, who's basically a bit of a buffoon, who's always landing himself into trouble. So Joe's like a source of a lot of the comedy as well, because there's quite a bit of, well, hopefully a bit of humor in there as well, to sort of lighten the darkness. But for the most part of it, it's action and fighting.
There's real energy to it, Zach, I've got to tell you, mate. Yeah, you really keep the energy levels up in it as well, you know.
Yeah,
it doesn't really pause, does it?
No, I'm trying to, I think that the fact that I'm trying to do it as well as, well, alongside all my other work and stuff, just means I would like to have it a bit more drawn out in some ways, but just knowing that I've got to, you know, I want to finish it, basically. So.
No, I think it works. I think it works.
Trying to keep the pace up and sort of pack each issue full of as much of the story as I can and keep it rolling along at a quick pace. I just thought,
if only everyone had that attitude, Zach. packing issues with story. Who'd have thought it, eh? Yeah. There's a few people that could take your advice, I've got to tell you. Yeah.
But I quite like the psychic. If you kind of have the reference point of, like, these two guys have known each other all their lives, and this guy is going to stay normal, as it were, while his friend goes through these horrific changes. It kind of is a good anchor point for the reader to make the contrast between the two. So that's a nice storytelling technique, and it plays out really well in the first two at least.
Oh, cheers. So. I always thought that I think, you know, you always have situations in life where you're going through something in particular, but, you know, your friends aren't necessarily, and they're still having fun or whatever, and, you know, maybe more naive or, you know, daft. So I think, yeah, Joe is totally clueless, and even though his friend's going through something really difficult, he tries his best, but he doesn't really have a clue as, you know, to what it feels like to be him. And he's a bit of a, I don't know, he's not a particularly deep thinker, so he just sort of glosses over a lot of things. And he can seem a bit insincere or like he doesn't really care, but he does. He's just doesn't really know how to show it or to express his feelings or anything like that.
I see that whole thing with the kind of monster within. It's such a kind of Titanic precedent set by the Hulk that kind of when he gets that extreme of emotions and stuff, it kind of takes over. I mean, a lot of kind of monster comics where characters do have the kind of monster inside them always hark back to that. And I've seen 101 rip-offs of characters that people have come up with, like when Joe Bloggs gets aggravated, he turns into
it's the Jekyll and Hyde, isn't it? Man. You know, Jekyll and Hyde was the template for so much. I mean, obviously the demon in the arm works in a slightly different way, isn't it? Because it's not his internal demon, it's literally a demon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As his arm. Where did you get that idea?
Well, I don't know. I think it's like the whole demon in the arm thing. I think it's actually quite common in sort of Eastern fiction. Like you get it in like Devil May Cry and stuff. You know, I can't remember which one it was. Devil May Cry 3 or something. Where he's got like a demon on. But there's lots of things, and I guess you get stuff like Witchblade and the Darkness as well over in America.
Oh yeah,
Vampire Hunter D, because essentially Vampire Hunter D. Yeah. The character doesn't really talk, so the author realized I've got to have a character talking, and that's the parasite hand he's got that kind of talks shit all the time.
I forgot about that. See, I think there's a lot of things like that, and when I started, well, when I first came up with the sketches and things for Monstrosity, it was just for fun, really. It was just me blowing off steam while I was working at Pizza Hut, the original sketches. so it was just me just doing stuff that I just thought, this is cool, and just having fun with it. But the further I got along with it, I really wanted to delve into the character more and work stuff out and actually come up with a story that I thought was good and worth reading rather than just being fight scenes, which is what it was originally an excuse for when I first sort of started coming up with the sketches and things. But I hope that it's sort of got to a point where it's actually, you know, that the story is worth following as well, but also able to deliver the ridiculous fight scenes and, you know, the crazy set pieces and things like that as well.
I mean, like, you get concerned at the quiet moments, but if you don't have the quiet moments, the loud ones are empty, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think you need that balance in any comic, really, or in any piece of storytelling. If everything's firing on all cylinders all the way through, it's like nothing really stands out. It just gets a bit boring, to be honest. So,
this is kind of a bit of a metaphor, you know, like the Marvel kind of thing with. They've published their sales things and saying how bad it was, that Marvel are not doing so great at the moment. And essentially someone said that they're doing special events and special things all the time. There's never not an event on. And I don't know if this is true or not. But after a while, when you're constantly getting everything special, everything sale, you know, like those kind of sofa warehouses that there's a sale on every minute of the day.
I can't believe you went from Marvel Comics to sofa warehouses.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not a sale then. Because if it's a special sale every minute of every day, it's not special.
And I know a lot of people out there will agree with me that some of my favourite issues of comics are the quiet moments in between. The quiet issues when you see people away from like the battles and, you know, something that's is just fun. Like the X-Men playing basketball. Do you know what I mean? You know, how good were those episodes when you just got to hang out with the X-Men when they weren't trying to battle the Brood or something like that?
Well, I think he's saying now that, is it Secret Empire? Is that the next event, the Marvel event?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I think he's saying there's not going to be one for a while after that, is he? Well, I think what he said. Yeah. Which is a good idea. I'm all up for that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, shall I segue again? Peter David, he wrote a really great issue of X-Factor that absolutely made Quicksilver. And that was when they all go and see a psychiatrist, and Quicksilver like explains why he's an arsehole. It's because basically his world is full of people who can't run, who can't operate ATMs, and are just so slow at everything. And it's like, that's why I'm annoyed and wound up all the time.
That makes total sense.
You go fucking bananas. You know, like being like behind the self-service tills.
Oh, that does
fucking
my head
up
in
all the time. You'd be like, oh, well,
it makes you wonder now that that metaphor about using an ATM had something to do with him trying to pay the fucking tax bill.
Yeah.
Yes, Peter Cave has been in the news this week, folks. should we put it up on the awesome a link?
I don't know. Yeah, we can do.
We can kind of Google the story, but essentially Peter David owes a lot of money in back taxes from a bill he kind of accrued in the early 90s, and the tax man's basically come after him now for it, and he's gone sort of cap in hand to Joe Public and run a GoFundMe campaign to try and get as much of the money as possible.
Yeah. I think he said he hoped that they'd forgotten about the bill, the tax bill he owed them.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor fella.
If you're self-employed, don't ever, ever try that.
Yeah.
Don't. Yeah. I think that's just generally in relation to, you know, your gas bill. Yeah. You know, any kind of bill you get. Just don't think, I hope the gas have forgotten that I should pay that bill. I'll just leave it. I'll just leave it. You know, I do in the news agents. You know, if I go and buy a newspaper, I hope you forget to have to pay for it.
Yeah. You know.
We're looking after you, people. Don't do it or we'll come for you.
And a friend of ours and fellow podcaster has expressed the concern that if he sold the original art that he has over his desk, he could probably pay most of that bill, which I think I'm all for. Go and sell that piece of original art, Peter, and you'll be all right, mate. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Just set up a raffle, like $10 per entry.
A raffle?
Yeah.
Well,
and then, like, fucking everyone would want some of that. And then,
come to Peter David's meat raffle. Whee!
Yeah. Original art raffle.
He's got a fair amount of meat on him, isn't he? Let's face it.
We went there, and we went there quick.
Yeah, we done it.
Right. Back to Monstrosity. Seriously, folks, okay. if you haven't seen this book, I think listeners of this show will get a big kick.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Out of this stuff. If you like the sort of nonsense that like me and Dan put out, and it is nonsense, Monstrosity is right up your alley.
The only one of the other things I could maybe, it's not like it at all, but in the same kind of area, is the Reckless Heroes output. It's very different to that, but if you love that kind of high colour, high octane action,
highly polished.
Highly polished, yeah.
Oh, have we fluffed you enough yet, Zach? Are you
Yeah.
Zach, a little bit longer.
Nearly
longer.
Oh,
there.
And Zach's doing this on his jack. There's like a team of that lot, and he's doing it on his own. So
they've got hundreds of people working with them at Reckless Heroes.
they're an army. And I will say this, Zach, that, you know, fair play to you to put out this comic, as well as all your work with the Phoenix, and no doubt lots of other illustration stuff. You must be working pretty non-stop.
Yeah, it gets pretty crazy, to be honest. But I mean, that's probably why it takes so long to put it out, I think, because new Monstrosity issues, that is, because obviously doing stuff with the Phoenix and other stuff during the day just means that when you do finally finish work, your hands and your arms and your brain is sort of worn out from comic drawing, so it's quite hard to get the time to actually put back into making more comics.
Without going into it too much, kind of day job, is that comic related or do you do something different?
No, the day job is all freelance comics. It's mostly Phoenix stuff, but I do stuff for other publishers as well. Like I've done a couple of covers for Titan in the past, a couple of Doctor Who covers, and
nice one.
Recently did some covers for the new Super Mansion comic, which I don't know if you've seen that. It's,
no.
By the Bryan Cranston show.
That's the one, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. But,
made Robot Chicken, yeah. There's a comic for that coming out from Titan, and I've done covers for the first two issues. As have several other people, there's quite a few variants. But, all sorts of bits and pieces, really, all over the place. It keeps me busy, definitely. But the main thing is really the Phoenix stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What are you working on for the Phoenix at the moment? The Phoenix is a group of people, and like I love what they're doing on a weekly basis, and we definitely need to get one of the head editors or something on to talk more about it. But what do you do for the Phoenix?
In the past, I've done a series called... was it Sky Drifters, which is one that I wrote and drew myself, about this little puffin called Todd who goes around in a flying cloud.
Naturally.
Yeah, of course.
Autobiographical?
Yeah, how did you know, man? Yeah. Yeah, he's basically trying to find his way home, and yeah, so it's like an all animal world, lots of different stories, like each time it's like a new adventure. I haven't done any of that for a little while, so hoping to do some more of that soon. But most recently I've been working on their editorial characters, which are like their equivalent of, you know, like Tharg. But they've got like a whole host of characters.
They've got a group of characters, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah, who like the supposed editors are like Tabs and Chops, and then there's some baddies in Phoenix HQ as well. Yeah. So yeah,
they run throughout the issues, don't they? That those sort of characters pop up throughout every issue. Right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They used to just appear at the start and the end, but yeah, in the last year or so, they've started getting their own strips as well. So yeah, they're doing some fun stuff with that. A guy called Lee Robinson has been doing a lot of those lately. He's wicked. His stuff is awesome.
So when you're working on this this sort of stuff, how do you get your mindset switched to working on something like Monstrosity, or to switch like to the giant monster sort of stuff? Is it easy? Do you find it easy?
I do find it quite easy, because they sort of scratch different itches. Like, I really love doing cartoony kid stuff as well. Like, I'm really massively into like Disney films and things as well. Yeah. Like, I love that type of artwork and big animation.
I can see that in your style, actually. I can totally see that sort
of. Oh, cool! Oh, I'm glad. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So how do you work, Zach? Is it digital, all digital, or are you still kind of traditional? How do you think?
It's all digital now. Yeah, up until quite recently, I was basically doing all my roughs in Photoshop and then printing out the roughs like really muted, like real pale blue, and then inking on Bristol board. About a year ago, I got a Cintiq. So I've switched all digital since then. So. Yeah, I find it a lot easier. It's definitely speeds me up a lot.
Oh, nice one.
So I'd imagine, like, with the Phoenix and, like, you're obviously Monstrosity, and let's not forget that we all do this, you have your own life to live when you're not working on comics. have you ever done, like, any commission work or anything like that? Because you'd be able to do some awesome stuff, I think, for folks. Have you ever thought about doing that?
I've done some commissions in the past. I don't take on a ton of them, but
it's time, really.
Yeah, I think it's time. I'll try and do a few around convention season and stuff like that if I can, but oftentimes just the Phoenix stuff or whatever I'm working on at the time of the day job just tends to really overtake everything else and make it quite hard to fit in much other material.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think maybe a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but some people don't take into account, is when you're working on comics full time, you know, people think, oh, they've got more time to do commissions, or they've got this more time to do freelance stuff. You've almost got less time to do commissions than if you're doing it more in the hobby sort of vein. Does that make sense? Because you're doing comics, and then, like, you're Monstrosity when you can, and you have deadlines and you those sort of pressures as well. So there certainly is less time to do those sort of commissions. I do wonder how a lot of pros churn out these huge commission lists.
Yeah, it's mad. Like, when you see like Chris Samney always turning out these amazing drawings every day or whatever, it's ridiculous.
It's when they go, oh, I've just done a warm up and a warm down, or whatever it is they do, and you think, that's a fucking page's work.
Yeah. I can understand the warm up, the warm down, God knows.
Yeah.
Just walk, done, walk away.
You always got to warm down collapse after a workout, Dan. You know that. Otherwise, you pull your hamstrings.
Or drawing comics.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised if someone's done it.
So yes. Who are the artists who you enjoy just for their sort of monster work? Are there any sort of particular monsters, you know, that you've seen drawn? I'm thinking about Dave Wachter. I really like his sort of monster. I did a book called Breath of Bones, if you've read it.
I've seen that.
Yeah, that's really... You've read that, Vince, haven't you?
I haven't read that one. I love Dave Wachter's work, though. That's a very sort of watercolory, sort of paintery style. Is that the one about the golem or golem? Or
that's whatever. The one, yeah. And he does... Cool. I think he's done some Godzilla and stuff, hasn't he? Is there anyone in... Or sort of Jeff Darrow or somebody like that? Is anyone in particular that you really enjoy the sort of monster style that they use?
Yeah, like one person at the moment whose stuff I'm loving is James Harren on Rumble. His monster stuff is mad. It's brilliant. So good. And his action as well is just ludicrously good. He's a beast of an artist.
He's got a really strange design style, isn't he? The monsters, kind of, you look at them and they shouldn't work, but they really do.
You know what I mean? And they're very unique stuff, for sure.
His style all kind of reminds me of, is it Sean Gordon Murphy? Tokyo Ghost. That style, I know as his style has progressed, that's become a lot more sort of splashy and lots of ink wash, you know, ink splashes and stuff like that. But he used to do a lot more of a cleaner line. And James Harren's artwork, feel, you know, there's definitely that influence in it. I love Rumble. Rumble's such
a Rumble's incredible. So good. To me, and also the big elephant in the room for me is the Mignolaverse. You know, the imagination in the creatures and those, by all of the art, it's not just Mignola. Yeah. It's just incredible stuff, isn't there, you know?
Yeah. I think we would be remiss. A lot of people will probably be shouting at their podcast if we don't mention it. Is James Stoko? Is it Stoko?
His
work. I mean, I always take it back to when I first saw those pages. Did you ever see the Spider-Nam? Did you ever see those pages he did?
Yeah.
He did like a. He just did it off his own back, didn't he, Zach? I think he did like Spider-Man in Vietnam kind of thing.
And I've not seen these.
It was like four or five pages. Genuinely look it up because it's. It's beautiful work, and it's just fantastic layouts. It's the sort of thing you look at and you think, I'd read a whole comic of that. Oh, completely. But I know he's done a lot of Godzilla work, hasn't he? Is it Godzilla in Hell? Is that what he did?
Yes, he has. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when you see a creation mixed with an artist and you think, this is going to be insanely good. You know, that's a match made in heaven sort of thing.
Yeah.
I personally, I've never drawn him, but the idea of Godzilla as a drawn concept is terrifying.
God, yeah.
You know, because you could sort of say, yeah, it's just a big lizard monster, but it's not, especially these days when everyone puts so much detail in it and texture. You can't just chuck out a big dinosaur-like shape now. You know, you have to get the back spines right, and his skin has that texture, doesn't it?
To be textured like a mother.
Yeah.
Stoker definitely does that.
Yeah. Have you read any of that?
I think the Godzilla in Hell, for what I understand, it's like four issues, and each one is drawn by a different person, I think. Yeah, I think he did the first one or the second one. I'm not entirely sure, but I think all the other ones, they're all kind of like standalone ones, just little one-offs, all going for like a different level of hell or something, from what I understand anyway. So I've only read his one just because I'm a big fan of his in particular, but I'm sure the others are wicked as well. I just haven't gotten around to checking those.
I took one it didn't instantly jump to mind, but Ross Campbell, he did Glory.
Good shout.
The monsters on them are actually fantastic, especially in the second art, half of the kind of arc. There's huge towering monsters in that. That's really well done. Again, that's kind of got those little bits and bobs of kind of real world insects and creatures, and they're kind of cobbled together.
Yeah.
And they're really great, grotesque stuff.
Which is a nice segue to our first poll. Does size matter? Everyone went quiet. But one of the questions we asked you lovely listeners this week was, how big do you like your giant monsters? Now, I was fully prepared to get some silly answers for this, and we didn't really. I was quite surprised, and I'm quite proud of you all for not rising to that bait. We had four different answers. We had city destroyers, planet munchers, as big as a shed, and size isn't important. Which one do you think came out on top when it came to giant monsters?
City size.
Yeah, I reckon that's why I voted.
Yeah, same.
Well, because of your votes, City Destroyers was indeed the top choice.
Hey.
I think it's probably the main choice, actually. I think when they think of monsters, you know, even the Beastie Boys will do they did do a video all about a giant monster.
Yeah.
And an Ultraman-like character, wasn't it? Like a giant robot, wasn't it, if I remember correctly?
Yeah.
City Destroyers came out on top with 47%. In second place was size isn't important. In third was planet munchers, because I don't think, do you think we see enough sort of, you know, creatures so big, you know, that they're just living out in space, apart from Galactus, of course, eating planets like their jam.
Do you know, like the Celestials and stuff, don't you, I suppose?
Yeah.
You
know?
It's such a big threat, it's hard to kind of, for me at least, kind of get to, I don't know, it's a bit too big of a threat to kind of like identify with.
Yeah.
If you've got some big monster coming around, smashing around buildings, it's a little more kind of understandable than something bigger than the Earth.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
So size really is important. I mean, in fourth place was as big as a shed, because how big does it need to be before you classify it giant? You know, if you consider it to be as tall as your house, that's still pretty big, isn't it?
Yeah. I reckon there's some kind of classification amongst some sort of nerd group who say, oh no, that's a such and such, and this is a such and such, and you know, it's got to be somewhere. We'll get a bite on the arse somewhere for it, won't we?
Yeah.
Google wants the size chart. I bet you something comes up.
There will be, won't it?
Or an infographic. Infographic. Ooh. We got a couple of replies. Simon Russell, at Simon at Boing. He says, on film, City Stompers are where it's at, but on the page, there's more menace if figures are closer in scale.
Yeah, I'll make him right on that. I'd find more menace from, say, Man-Thing, than I would from a Godzilla versus a Man comic, I suppose.
Do you think that's because, like, against a giant city-destroying monster, one person can't be, you know...
He's going to fire a tank at it, aren't you? It's not going to work.
Yeah.
And it's going to smash you up. That's about it, really, isn't it?
What do you call it? Big Guy and Rusty the Robot. That is essentially a man-sized person versus a Godzilla monster. And that's a great comic.
Or look at the Robusters we talked about a couple of weeks ago, which was the sort of, they sent all the Mechwake and all his pals to fight a sort of northern city robot, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was a very sort of personal story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
The pant-wearing Nick Brokenshire, friend of the show, before anyone thinks we're being nasty to him, he said, is anyone familiar with Ultraman? Now that's my jam, yo. I wish he had spoken like that when he was on the show.
Of course we are. Yeah, well, I am, at least. You guys know Ultraman.
I know him, but I've never seen any Ultraman.
Yeah, same.
I've seen a film that was dubbed many years ago. I couldn't even remember which version of Ultraman that is, because this is one of those things that gets reinvented every couple of years, isn't it?
Ultraman is certainly a big influence in a book that I know Dan's going to be talking about this week, and it was going to be a book I was going to talk about, but there's definitely an Ultraman influence in that, isn't there?
Big time, yeah.
And Andy, CT, at Super Andy, he says, I enjoy a big old planet gobbler, but City Wreckers are the optimal monster size. Which I think says it all, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I think for most people, if they go do a comic, it will be one that wrecks a city rather than a planet.
And like we've talked about before, it'll be interesting to see how they do Ego, the living planet.
Yeah.
Well, they've done him as Kurt Russell, so they've
that's
as good as
how
it
does
gets.
That work?
It's weird. Like, out of all the films, that's the one I'm most kind of like, please be good, because the benchmark for one. This seems so high.
Yeah,
it's gonna have to be really good to
everything about it seems like more of the same.
That's what I want.
That's fine.
And that's exactly what I want. That's like, you know, I don't want loads of shoehorning in lots of other things. You just want, it's like episode two of a series. Do you know what I mean? It just feels like you just move. It's keeping the same tone. So hopefully, I can't wait for that. We get that at the end of April as well, don't we?
Nice.
Oh, do we?
What?
Yeah. Go on. We always get the Marvel films a week before America.
A little bit earlier.
Yeah. In America, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 comes out May the 5th, I think.
While we're on this little tangent, the trailer for the new It film, I was so sceptical about that, but after seeing that trailer, I was like, that's great. I'm going to be seeing that.
Has everyone seen that trailer?
Yeah.
No.
Ah. Well, you're probably the only person on planet Earth who hasn't, Zach, because that broke all kind of internet records with something like 124 million views in 24 hours.
See, for me, Hollywood, that's the type of thing you should be going back to and remaking. Remake stuff that's a great book, great ideas, but this wasn't executed quite right, and then remake that. Don't remake stuff like The Matrix and stuff that's done really well. We don't need that again. It's
hear, hear, Madam Speaker.
We didn't need fucking Total Recall remake. We didn't need a Point Break remake.
Didn't need a Halloween remake.
Didn't we?
We don't need a Big Trouble in Little China remake. It's a perfection.
It's one of your favourite films of all time.
It's a life model for me. It's not just my favourite film. I base everything I say and do on it. Yeah.
Brought up the Jay Wilson on or Jay Gunn on Twitter mentioned the Black Hole, Disney Black Hole film.
There we go.
Yes.
Were you saying that you were named after Vincent the Robot? That's a joke, I presume.
Nope.
It'd be totally cool. Really? Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. here we go.
I didn't know this. Why didn't I know this?
I am. If anyone's seen Disney's The Black Hole, which what year did that come out?
Was it 70s or 80s?
I think it was at the cinema in 1980.
Right. Okay.
And can't believe I'm going to tell quite a personal story. But while I was being born, my dad took my two brothers to the cinema, and they saw that film. And when so they named me Vincent after the robot in Disney's Black Hole.
Ah, okay.
And do you know what? I'm massively proud of that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Roddy McDowall character.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. I like Roddy McDowall. He's underheralded actor.
Yeah.
And also the robot looks a little bit like a floating pedal bin, which is how I live my life.
Yeah.
Who's this sort of slightly broken down mate who's been bashed up?
I don't know. Is it Tony?
Yeah, I think it might be. He's got a mate who just looks like a version of him, but somebody's just kicked the bin to shit, haven't they?
Yeah.
In a sort of rage.
But there's that absolute badass robot, Maximilian.
Yeah.
The big red one.
The gunfighter one.
They didn't name me that, though, did I? Did they?
No. Well, he's the one that kind of had the saw, the kind of rotating blade.
Yeah.
And he's saying.
But he doesn't mean that gun competition. Don't they go to a shooting range?
Oh, there's another black one, isn't there? That kind of like the gunslinger one. You know the one that the main mad scientist, he's got that kind of big red robot that floats around. He sort of suggested that he's the actual brains behind the thing.
And spoilers, doesn't he get stuck in the robot as it's floating away into space?
Yeah, at the end, he's kind of...
It he's gets like really sexy, Tony.
He's like cannibalised it. We always get around to fucking robots.
We do. Why is this? One day somebody will turn the webcam on and one of us will be fucking a robot.
Fucking robots.
Every conversation seems to come back to robot sex. I don't know why.
You like that?
That's
not Zach is. Zach, have you ever fucked a robot?
That'd be telling.
Don't worry, I can edit it out if you want.
Yeah, okay.
We might have all fucked a robot. We're not virgins. Well, I am. But you three clearly aren't. So we might all have had one and not known.
True.
And not known.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Dear. Have you fucked a robot, folks? You can let us know at...
You won't be able to email it in for that.
I tell you what, based on our topic next week, that could potentially be a poll.
Yep.
All right, Roddy McDowall. I think the other one we're ignoring, the other big monster comic, is 2000 AD. I think that's the one that's got like loads in it, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. We've mentioned him a couple of times this show, but Jay Gunn did mention Flesh. Is it Flesh?
Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly.
He said they're kind of like big dinosaurs, but you still count. It still counts, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think dinosaurs count, don't they?
There's a big... What's the big dinosaur? The kind of the black dinosaur in 2000 AD?
Satanus.
Yeah, and then doesn't he have old Ronai, his mother or something? I can't remember.
Right. Old Ronai.
Yeah, I'm a bit lost. Yeah, I knew we'd get back there. But that's clever, because they go back to farm dinosaurs, don't they? Because they know dinosaurs will die out. So there's going to be no time paradox. We can go back and farm them for their meat and thus feed the starving nations of the world. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That is a good idea. If only we had thought about it.
I mean, if you can time travel, the first thing I would do, let's go back and harvest dinosaurs. I'd like to think I'd come up with a bit more of an intelligent plan.
You travel forward and fuck a robot. You know.
Do you, Do you think, for a lot of creators, there's a lot of creators out there that definitely love sort of giant monsters and creating monsters and stuff. Do you think their gateway drug, like growing up, is dinosaurs?
Maybe.
Yeah. Zach.
Well, what I'm going to talk about later, definitely. Yes. Yeah.
Did you, Zach, did you start off with dinosaurs and then evolve onto big beasties, or was there something else?
yeah, definitely start with
that
dinosaurs.
That's a serious question. I wasn't trying to.
I don't know.
Did you fuck a dinosaur and then decide to move on and start with that?
Dinosaur had a baby.
Oh, God. yeah. No, when I was like a little kid, yeah, definitely dinosaurs. I was well into them. I think I had a book on dinosaurs and lots of dinosaur toys, always drawing them.
Yeah.
But, I think all like little kids, they all know all the names of the dinosaurs, I think. Not all kids, but a lot of kids get really into it. And I was definitely one of those. And I think after that, just weird monsters and stuff, kind of came out of that. But
I think a lot of the weird monsters you do see, you know, those creators originally, you know, it probably does stem from dinosaurs. You know, they're the original big monsters for them, aren't they? You know, the T-Rex. When you're a little kid, the T-Rex is like the most is the best thing in the world ever, and you see those sort of designs filter through to other creatures that we all know and love. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to talk about it a bit in my review, but the one that sort of all that we're influenced by movies when we're kids, aren't we? A lot of the time, and the visual stuff of like a million years BC and when dinosaurs ruled the Earth and journey to the center of the Earth's core and all that sort of tap.
Yeah,
you know, that really influenced us as kids.
Yeah, big time.
Scared the shit out of me. You know, and then we got onto like the Godzilla movies, and occasionally you'd see Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla or King Kong versus Godzilla, or you know, any number of variants of that. You know, we're hugely influenced by that, definitely, I think. And kids do love dinosaurs. It's the first thing, and you want to know about the most dangerous dinosaur. It's all you want to know about is, you know.
Yeah.
But then also, the Godzilla has the influence, because it starts off with, you know, the dinosaur like Godzilla, but then they throw in Mothra and things like that.
You know,
something that's completely different. It's not all dinosaurs. And that's obviously had so much of an influence on so many creators going forward, like giant insect creatures. Is there anything scarier than a giant insect?
Yeah, and then you've got movies like Them, you know, these sort of things as well, haven't you? You know.
Yeah. I mean, certainly in Lord of the Rings, one of the creepiest and foulest bits is Shelob. I always say that wrong, but that bit's just so well done and so creepy.
Well, the one that I also freaked me out as a teenager was Dune, and the Shire Hood,
the sandworms.
Fucking freaked me out.
Yeah.
You know, I read the books before seeing the movie, and I'm thinking this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know.
Another underground sort of creatures. I love those sort of things. I mean, anyone who's read my comic will always makes a Tremors reference, but Tremors is one of my favourite films of all time.
Tremors is great.
And the first creature design on that is just so... Because it works.
I think that's really overlooked, that film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much
it's
overlooked.
It's just absolutely just dynamite all the way through.
Yes.
Yeah.
So good. I mean, I watched it a couple of months ago, and right from the beginning I thought, this is almost perfect pacing. You know, you've got good characters, good setup. Because let's not forget, in these monster movies, in these monster comics that we're talking about, yes, it's cool if your monster is great, but that won't make it memorable. It's the people, it's the characters that you fill this story with. Mm. And certainly a lot of, like, all of our favourite films, probably, we could quote them endlessly because they've had great characters speaking these lines.
That's very quotable, isn't it? All the different mad people that live in that little desert community are all great, aren't they?
Yeah.
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 What's that place called again? It's not Desperation, it's the opposite of that.
Isn't it Perfection or something like that?
Perfection, that's it, yeah.
In fact, Tremors 3 is called Back to Perfection, isn't it?
Oh, right, there's only one Tremors for me. I know they've been talking about a series with Kevin Bacon for a while, haven't they?
They did a series, didn't they? They did a series...
I think they're going to try and do a new one with the original Bacon.
Mm. With the Bacon? Okay.
With Bacon.
I wonder if... what was that other guy? Fred Williamson.
Fred Ward, is it?
Fred Ward, yeah.
Yeah.
Fred Ward, yeah.
Is it Ward?
Really, it was also Remo.
Yeah, Remo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Back round to Remo.
Yeah.
Always back round to him.
I finished that first book, did I tell you?
No, you didn't, mate. You like it?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Make yourself funny, Zach. They've started talking about Remo.
You think, oh, like the kind of the way we treat women in society, we always treat them fairly well. We give them a good crack of the whip. And then you read that book and you think, actually, you go back to that age and it's absolutely ridiculous.
It's absolutely
ridiculous.
There's a whole part of the sort of martial arts thing he does, which is how you can get a woman to have sex with you by turning her wrist or something, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a bit when he could kind of project his spirit onto the woman so she'd want him. And I was like, you've been training for like 3 months. You got this down.
I've been training all my life for that. It's still not working.
Yeah, I just want to let people know that I am in no way personally affiliated with Dan Butcher or Tony Esmond.
The opinions.
I'm going to have to put a legal disclaimer before most of the shows these days.
No, but it's just kind of like one of those things that you read, and there was so many bits when I said to my wife, "Fucking hell, look at this," and we'd laugh because
it gets worse as well. There's one episode which is clearly his mate got robbed or something, so it's just about Remo going around beating people who are sort of muggers, and then there's recurring villains who are like TV executives, clearly after the creator got done over around the rights of the movie or something. You know, he just takes it out in these books. He's run about 4 a year, I think, at one point.
Bloody hell. We're going to have a Remo episode.
Well, there are Remo comics. There's quite a few. Very good.
There you go. Yeah, there's a future episode.
Okay, back to monsters. For me, and I think this needs saying, the daddy of them all has got to be Kirby. The imagination on that fucking geezer. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was coming up. Sometimes was doing 2 or 3 books a month and was just creating, you know, from Thor to Fantastic Four, you know, to the X-Men. And then when he went over to DC and all the craziness that went on there.
Yeah,
you know, and he's when he did Devil Dinosaur and just incredible stuff, you know.
I really would like an insight to kind of like the time scheduling and what these people did with their time and how much time they did spend at the board drawing doing it.
Yeah,
I mean, nowadays artists are pretty open about what they do and how they spend their time, but God knows how many hours he was putting into it. Kirby.
Yeah, he didn't get to put shit on Twitter all day, did he, I suppose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a different world we'd have been in if Twitter had been around then.
Yeah, and he didn't take, you know, there was no substances that passed his lips, was there? It was just like pure imagination with Kirby, you know, just sat at a table, drew nonstop. Yeah, and did it well. Every day, you know.
And his imagination never seemed to run dry either, did it? It was always so
look at those first sort of 60, 70 issues of Fantastic Four. Fucking hell, he basically created every tentpole for the Marvel Universe, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, whether his style is something you like or not, do not dismiss any creator, you know, especially like the Golden Age sort of creator, you know. Don't dismiss their work, because before them, what was there?
The
imagination that they had gives you what you have now, you know.
So. Yeah. Yeah,
and Lord knows they've been recycling a lot of that stuff for many, many years.
Oh, look at I was thinking about it today. The Inhumans, you know, how much money they're going to make out of that? You know, and that was just a couple of issues. Yeah. Or Black Panther, you know, something like that. He just sort of reeled it all off, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know.
Oh. He's a dude.
He's the man.
And we might be doing a special episode.
There is a good chance of that, isn't there?
There's a good chance of that later in the year. So. I better get my research hat on. Our second poll that we put out, I'll leave the big versus one till the end. But our second poll was, where do you think is the best place to set a story about a giant monster? And we had 4 answers for this one. A city, space, underwater, or Hull.
You were very pleased with that one, weren't you?
This is the only one I voted on because, usually I don't vote on them. Yeah, I did vote on this one.
Now, knowing the people that follow our Twitter or listen to this show, which one do you think came out on top?
Hull. Easy. Yeah.
Well, you'd be right. Apparently, a lot of people want to see a giant monster story set in Hull. So there you go, that one out with 46% of the votes. In second place was a city. I think if it was a more serious question, I think a city would have come out on top. That seems to be what everyone Do you think it's what everyone knows best? Is it because
we're and maybe a sort of Monster Island kind of arrangement thing.
Yeah.
That's a reasonably common thing to go to, isn't it? You know.
I mean, the other two choices, Underwater came third and Space came fourth. Space only had 4%. Is it because we haven't seen enough of those? Is it?
No. There's nothing there, though, literally. I mean, you're kind of floating around in a void.
You could do a lot with an underwater monster story, surely.
Well, they kind of, the ending of, what do you call it, Pacific Rim was that. And I felt it lost a little bit for me. But when they're kind of fighting at sea in the beginning, that's great. But when they're kind of right underwater, I was kind of, okay, it's all a bit slower, a bit darker.
You get a bit of that with maybe sort of Challenges of the Unknown or Namor or Aquaman. You know, some of these sort of Fantastic Four sometimes. There's a sort of sci-fi element to it. You know, the Nautilus sort of thing, isn't there? There's always the big octopus or squid or something, isn't there, attacking something. You get quite a lot, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always the sort of go-to, is it? I mean, I think for a lot of creators.
Yeah.
Forget Sequest DSV. Remember that?
Talking dolphin.
The last season, that was quite good, when it all went a bit sort of Total Recall, didn't it? It all went a bit apocalypse sort of type stuff.
Did it really?
Well,
I didn't.
Who's the bloke who's in Scanners? The villain in Scanners?
Michael Ironside.
Didn't he take it over in the last season? I think that's actually not too bad.
To be fair, they only used to put it on ITV, like seemingly on a whim, every other week or so.
They made a big deal out of it when it started, about 3 weeks in. It was lost somewhere on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah,
did you ever watch Sequest, Zach?
I remember it being on and remember it being advertised, but I never actually watched the show. No.
I've got some Betamax if you want to borrow them, Zach.
Nice one, yeah, send them that.
It's got that fucking talking dolphin. That just upset.
Roy Schneider.
Yeah, but that doesn't always save a show, though, does it?
No, he fell out of bed with them, didn't he? He left at the end of season two. And he ran three seasons, didn't he?
Well, Roy Schneider played the dolphin.
Yeah. full body makeup.
Definitely, mate. Get those in the post. So.
That'd be amazing. Do you think any of our listeners out there should make a comic about a giant monster attacking Hull? And I'll tell you what, when I did this answer, it wasn't anything against Hull. It just sounded funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
Have you actually been to Hull?
No.
That's perfectly suitable, in my opinion. I've been there. I reckon Paul Rainey would do a good comic about that.
That would be such a strange, crazy and wonderful
book, wouldn't it? Would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. What's off the top of your head, I mean, obviously this is... I don't blame you if you can't think of anything. What small press and indie creators out there would you like to see take a stab... a giant monster comic, or I don't know, pin-up, or anything like that.
Well, obviously Daryl Thorpe, who was on last week's show, he does a bit of that, doesn't he? He does a bit of underwater creatures, doesn't he? In his recent comics, and that works really well.
That's great.
Who else?
That's a difficult one.
Zach, do you know anyone who draws a good
Harrower,
monster apart from yourself?
I'd say Matt Harrower, definitely. He does that sort of mecha, sort of trippy monster type space, you know, spacey type stuff, doesn't he? I'd love to see him do like a monster stomp in a city type story. Yeah. Brilliant. Mm. Yeah.
I just think anybody's got like a good, like, I think it's all going to come from the story more than anything. I mean, the visuals are one thing, but
yeah.
I think the coolest thing about giant monsters, and I think why cities, you know, are a good place to set them is just... because I think what really makes them is how, like, the human response to a giant monster, more than anything.
Yeah.
So I think you can have a wicked cool monster and stuff, but then just, if it's smashing up a city and destroying civilization, there's like a more human gut response to it, I think.
Yeah. I think that's the moral of this week's show, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you can have the coolest monster in the world, but if your people are unlikable, you know. It's like there's that, this year there's that, is it Colossal? The Anne Hathaway film that's about the giant monster. Have you guys seen?
No. Oh, I've seen the poster for it, I think. Yeah.
I think, I'm not sure whether it comes from a comics originally, but the story is there's this woman who's, I think it's almost a metaphor for drink problems, but you watch the trailer and it looks like a sort of comedy, but I have a feeling you're going to watch the film and it's going to be a completely different sort of experience.
It's going to give me drink problems, isn't it?
yeah, this woman whose life is a bit of a mess, and then at the same time in the world, a giant monster is attacking, I don't know whether it's Tokyo or Hong Kong or whatever, and smashing up everything. And then when
I feel sorry for Tokyo, don't you, sometimes? Yeah. They get picked on a lot, don't they?
Yeah. Well, all the big cities, isn't it? I know London gets a
bit... I'd like more diversity. Do you know what I mean? More diversity of cities getting picked on. I think that's something that's needed.
Okay. Mm. What cities do you think need a good smashing from a giant monster?
Okay, Stevenage, Gillingham, Chatham, anywhere in the Midway Towns, to be fair. Bath, obviously.
Although that would be quite cool.
Yeah. Anywhere in Wales.
It'd be good, Venice. That'd be a good one.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a good one. Yeah. That'd be a good sea monster one. Isn't it?
Yeah. Marching around the canals, smash the shit up.
Sydney?
Yeah.
Well, that told me.
What about Pret a Manger at Marble Arch? Because they nicked a fibre off me and claimed they'd give it to me to change.
Oh, that's fucked.
Yeah.
I would say anyone going into London, watch out for that kind of stuff, because it happens more than...
Yeah.
Let's give them a tenner. They are getting a fiver.
Yeah. And then monsters smash them up.
Don't go to London, folks.
I went to Doncaster once. That could do with smashing up.
Do you know what? Sometimes I really want you to write an autobiographical comic.
I was chatting to Mr. Webster about that this week, weren't I? Yeah. And he said, I'm not really sure, I might upset people. I said, you can see I've just clicked the like on that comment.
Yeah. he came out with three titles, and the second one was fucking genius.
Yeah, it would be like, Why I Want to Kill Everyone or something. I said, mate, write yourself, crack on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, I'd buy that, I've got a tea now. Yeah.
Oh, dear. So, to round off this conversation, shall we have the big question? Well, I think it's a big question. We asked, who would win out of Godzilla and King Kong? I'm interested, did any of you vote for this one?
Yeah, yep. I voted for this.
Oh, right.
Yep. I said I only voted for one, but I lied. I actually did.
I'm never going to trust anything you say, Dan. So,
me neither.
So, which ones did you vote for, Dave?
Godzilla. There's no way King Kong would beat Godzilla. No way.
Really?
I like the thing that he wouldn't, but I like the underdog, me. I like King Kong.
You also like
he's got
a more monkey.
Nice, he's got a nicer face, doesn't he?
Has he?
And I like monkeys and apes. Yeah, I do, I think.
All right, and as we got one each. Zach is the deciding factor here.
Okay. I vote Godzilla, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate.
You're dead to me.
I mean, it does intrigue me. I mean, obviously, we're going to see a film in a couple of years where you're actually going to see that fight, which is going to be no one's going to win.
Who won in the original film?
Godzilla.
Is it Godzilla wins? I can't remember.
King Kong sort of falls down and whacks his head.
Or does it?
The classic ending. As far as I can remember, and then Godzilla kind of wins.
Yeah, I think, and then the sequel, I think, because they don't want to be too rough on King Kong, he gets a cold and he wanders off.
You got to prefer Godzilla over King Kong, because Godzilla is essentially just a badass who staked out a bit of territory.
He's just a big lump of rock, isn't he, that breathes fire.
But... And anyone who wanders in, he's going to fuck him up. Doesn't really give a shit about destroying
that,
the city.
But... Certainly, King Kong's—he's got the speed, hasn't he? He's certainly more agile. Godzilla's got—he's got the weaponry, but he's
got that atomic fire breath.
He's not exactly quick, is he? I think it would be an interesting fight. I mean, my brain automatically thinks
he's nicer, though, isn't he, King Kong?
Is he?
Well, he's nice. He fell in love with that lady.
He does like the ladies, that big monkey.
He does, yeah. Occasionally, in the privacy of my own bedroom, when I've got like a visitor, I pretend to be King Kong. Do you know what I mean? I do a little bit of a King Kong move. throw myself around the room a bit, you know, make the noises.
I can see that relationship playing out well between a kind of 60-foot giant ape and a 5-foot tall woman.
No one really tackles that, do they?
No.
How big is King Kong's knob? It's not really tackled enough in films, is it?
It's tackled. Isn't tackled.
No.
How would you tackle King Kong's tackle?
I don't know. It takes a lot of CGI, wouldn't it? Maybe that's why he loves helicopters so much.
I mean... Oh, we love you, King Kong, even though we're picking on you.
Yeah.
I do... I would probably have to say Godzilla might win, but
yeah, I hate to admit he probably would. I just like the underdog me. I'd like King Kong to win. Give him a little hat, tie, or something. You know.
Why have you got to dress him up?
I don't like dressing things up, don't I?
That's true.
It's weird when all the King Kong sort of plot lines when they say, "Oh, like, we've heard that there's like an 80-foot massive rampaging gorilla," and everyone's first instinct is, "Oh, well, let's go and see. Let's go check it out." That's weird. I wouldn't have that reaction.
Yeah,
Which direction it is? Because I'm going the other way.
Straight to the laundrette to clean my trousers. Well, that brings up an interesting.
I mean, those fucking silverbacks are mad bastards. If it's just like that, but 60, 70 foot tall. Fucking hell!
Give you a good rattling, wouldn't it?
King Kong's not a
silverback. He'd do anything, King Kong. I reckon he'd do Pete's Dragon. Pete's Dragon appears, he'd probably try and do him, wouldn't he?
What? How do you mean do him? You mean like...
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I can't say the B word. I got a hate mail last time I said the B word, didn't I?
King Kong sexually assaulting Pete's Dragon is...
Oi, it's not sexual assault. Pete's Dragon would probably... They'd probably get on. They'd go out to the pub, have a little... King Kong would have a few drinks to him and he'd touch his hand. Pete's Dragon would be, I quite like this. It's all right. He's a caring lover. I'm not going out with Godzilla. You see how he kisses?
Oh, yeah. His breath is rank.
Yeah. And chewing gum.
Oh, dear. I should have put that as a poll. You know, who would be the better date, King Kong or Godzilla?
Who'd be the more generous lover, King Kong or Godzilla?
Mate, I make those noises. Zach. That's quite good for making love.
Yeah, Zach, you've been quiet. Who would be the more generous lover?
Yeah.
I think King Kong, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be how to train your dragon with a whole new meaning.
Oh, no.
Fuck it.
Right, this is the pain medication. That's all it is.
And I just... That's even funnier considering the main dragon's called Toothless, which I'm not going to take that joke any further.
I've not seen that film. Is it good?
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah.
If you like big dragons, the second one's got even bigger dragons in it.
Oh, yeah. So. That's got a giant dragon the size of a mountain.
And then you've got all these movies like Mega Shark versus, I don't know, flipping something else. All these like crappy Sharknado type movies, isn't
there?
There's loads of monster movies out there, aren't there?
Mega Croc versus Anaconda or something like that.
Yeah. Dragon Wasps. Lambo bought Dragon Wasps.
Go, that's a brand name.
Dragon Wasps.
Yeah. Basically, a load of porn stars go in the jungle. They look like porn stars. And they get attacked by these giant sort of CGI wasps who are not really very convincing. They were looking in the wrong direction. And the only way they get out of it, I think, is by getting naked and covering themselves in cocaine. It's quite a good film.
No, is this an actual film?
Yeah, it's how I've got myself out of trouble a few times.
Did Mark give you this? It was like on one of the, like a shop bought DVD.
I think it's what he found in a bin. He said somewhere. He said I burned it.
Found in a bin. Oh dear. So when you guys were talking about bin diving, I thought you were talking about comics.
Yeah. Freeganism.
Oh dear. What a week for it to go completely off the rails. But I think...
It's been all right, though.
Yeah, it's been all right. And I think giant monsters have been well and truly covered.
Yeah.
But where can people get hold of Monstrosity, Zach?
Well, up until recently, it's just been at comic conventions, but I've been setting up a store online, so I'm not actually quite got that live just yet, but hopefully by the time this podcast goes out, it should be yeah, it should be up for download. I'll put a link on my website and stuff, so awesome. You can get it there.
Nice. And then we will, of course, have links in the show notes, etc. And I hope people check them out. I think some people do.
Yeah, it's a good comic, man. Yeah, I thoroughly recommend it. Yeah, definitely. Really, really good. Yeah.
How many issues are you looking? Because you say there's you want to get to the end, and there is an end in sight. How many issues are you going to go for with this run?
Well, what I've got in mind for the current story arc, anyway, is going to be, I think, well, it's going to be the 7 or 8 issues. I think probably more like the 8. I've got ideas for the story to continue after that, but I think really the amount of time it's taken me to get them out, with other stuff going on, I just want to commit to this first arc first and see how that goes. So yeah, probably 8 issues. I mean, if I could get it with a publisher, I'd love that, because then, you know, I'd love to roll it out longer and be able to commit more time to it. But, you know, chances are probably just the 8, I think, for the time being.
Just the 8, listen to you. Oh, yeah, that's right then.
Take one.
No, it's a quality 70. Book, though. We've talked about it a few times on this show. So, definitely check it out, folks, because we've thoroughly... And thank you for talking Giant Monsters with us, Zach.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
cheers, Zach.
The obvious choice.
No, my pleasure.
the
obvious choice for Giant Monsters, Zach Simonturn. He draws a good monster. He draws a good everything, actually. Yeah. You make me sick, Zach. You make me sick.
I'll put that on the blurb.
Yes, I got the pull quote. I got the pull quote of the week.
He says that to everyone.
That's true. We've been lied to so many times on this show. Oh dear! But do we have any shout outs this week?
I've got a couple.
Go for it.
Thanks to everyone who read my recent sort of in character rant. I only got, I think, 2 bad reactions to it, which I was quite pleased. I'm getting to the stage now with these where I sometimes almost don't press send on them.
Yeah,
fair enough. If you get a chance, go and read it. It's at neverironanything.blogspot.com, and it's basically about, we hear too much from some people, I think. Some people love the sound of their own voice. Listen to me saying that. He's on a weekly podcast. But I'm included in my own criticism. And thanks. And get over and read the review or the preview of Garbage Night by Jen Lee, which is out of Nobrow this week, which is very good as well. Well worth picking up. It's on the same blog.
Nice.
There you go. And thanks to everyone who wrote in when I came back from hospital after having an organ removed. Not that one. And sent me some nice messages, which was... one of the reasons why I'm a bit weird today, but thanks everyone for that. I got a lot of nice messages on the internet. Thank you. There you go.
Did you have trouble with the word internet then?
I did, yeah.
Well, Zach's only just discovered it, so. Oh, that was before we started recording, wasn't it, apparently?
What was that one?
Yeah, Zach didn't have the internet until recently, did you, Zach? You've been living
with it. Yeah, I only got on Thursday.
Very excited, aren't you, Zach?
Yeah. It's amazing.
I tried to get you to look at pornography, and I said that wasn't right. I think that's how the conversation went. Yeah. I don't think it
does explain why he's so busy and prolific, though, if he hasn't got the internet.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah,
that is true. Turn it off occasionally.
Yeah, I've got to say. Yeah, I've been a lot faster without it. I've got to say, it does make a difference. Yeah.
I mean, distractions and social media. What are your guys' thoughts on social media and the internet in general as a place that actually distracts from more work? Do you think we'd see more work if these things didn't exist, or if people...
Oh, definitely. Yeah, certainly, even just from a personal thing. I had a period of turning it off for a couple of days a week. I got so much more done, you know?
Yeah,
I can understand that. I mean, yeah. It does help in so many ways, but I think you got to have a real discipline and... keep jumping on,
because social media is so important with certainly promotion and self-promotion, not necessarily shameless self-promotion or the hard sell, but you know,
it's necessary for certain things. It's also very distracting.
I mean, like we spoke about, I wonder how so many artists that we're reading their comics, how they manage to get so much work done, because their Twitter feed is fairly constant.
I really admire those people who only put out, they keep their Twitter feed, especially professionals, who people go to their Twitter feed because they're fans of their work or they want to buy the next comic or something like that. And I really admire those guys who keep it sensible, professional. You know, they don't engage with the idiots. You know, they don't sort of go and moan non-stop on there about, you know, their washing machine's not working or something. You know, I really admire those people. I think that's a real discipline to that, you know.
I totally agree, Tony.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any shout out? Zach, would you like to shout out to anyone?
Yeah, I've got one shout out I'd like to do. My mate Lorenzo, this is Lorenzo Etherington of the Etherington Brothers. He's doing a Kickstarter soon for, I think that's right. The Kickstarter? He's doing a hardback art book of The Art of Stransky. Which starts in April, and if you've seen those posters that he does online, and he sort of animates them as well, ridiculously good. So
they're amazing stuff, and I always sort of looked at them and thought they were like a comic or a book, or you know. But he just sort of does these illustrations which hint at a bigger world. Is that right? They're just sort of like they're just posters for some like something that doesn't necessarily exist, but he's got a whole backstory to them, doesn't he?
Yeah, from what I understand, he's got a story in his head, but I think he just sort of likes to express it through these posters. I don't know if he'll ever do a comic with it or not, but I mean, the posters are amazing in and of themselves. They're beautiful pieces of art, like real retro style posters. Very, very cool. Yeah. And so imaginative. Each one just looks like nothing you've seen before. So really would recommend getting on those and checking those out.
Has that Kickstarter just started, or is it just about to?
I think it's... Is it towards the end of April, I think? I think that's right anyway. Might need to double check that. But yeah, if you go check out their Twitter or website, the Etherington Brothers, I'd definitely recommend doing that.
Yeah, top guys. Cool. We'll have to have them on the show in the future. We sort of... They were sat near us in True Believers, weren't they, Tony? And they were just...
And Nottingham, weren't they?
Yeah, non-stop energy and just... positivity, which is
like us.
There's me going, I'm so hungry, could you get me a sausage roll? I think especially in these times we're living in, the more positivity you can get, especially and just fun, is just and the Etherington Brothers are just, it's just great work. So I'm gonna write that down on my list. I'm trying not to do so many Kickstarters these days.
So, yeah, me too. I got back into them for a while, and there's a couple of people I will stick with. That a lot of them, you can't do them all, can you?
No. I think I did at one point, and then that's what made me decide not to. When the end of that month comes along, and you're just like, oh no, I forgot I pledged to that.
Well, congrats to John Late for
smashed it.
Brethrenborn 3.
Yes.
Yeah, well played.
Nice one.
Well very deserved. Good. Yeah. Got some good pin-ups as well.
Yeah, you got a pin up in it, Vince.
Well, the rest of them are good.
Well, Andy Blaw's got a pin up, and he was feeling a bit down in the week. And just keep at it, Andy. You're a good artist, and you do good work.
Yeah, we like Andy's work, don't we?
Yeah,
love Andy's work. So, and the pin up looks great. There you go. We have any recommendations? Of course we do. We've been reading comics. That's why we're here. Well, we try to read comics. Tony, did you get a chance? Because you obviously been...
I did.
...under the weather. Did that mean you read more or less?
I did read. I read quite a lot in the hospital, but I kept getting put off by all the roll and butters around me.
The what?
But
the roll and butters?
Nutters.
Right, I see.
Yeah.
His Cockney rhyming slang.
I'm from Middlesex, not a Cockney.
No, you're clearly not. Right.
So I came back home, and I thought, right, I need a bit of comfort food. I need something that I really enjoy. I'm going to read that. I wasn't quite focusing mentally or properly on everything. So I went back to a book that I've reread a number of times, and I absolutely love. And it's Tor, A Prehistoric Odyssey by Joe Kubert. Has anyone read it?
I've not read it. I do know of it.
But I've I know of it, and I've certainly seen a lot of that Joe Kubert artwork.
Yeah, just fucking hell, yeah. For those who don't know, Joe, and they should know, anyone listening to the show should know who Joe Kubert is for a number of reasons. One being that he's the founder of the Kubert School, which is the big art school in America for comic creators. His sons, Adam and Andy Kubert, a great Marvel artist and DC artist as well, and his granddaughter is Katie Kubert, who's, I think, is a DC editor, as I sort of remember. Joe passed away in 2012, and I got to meet him at the New York Comic Con a couple of years before that, and he was such, literally the nicest bloke ever. Just so friendly. Notable works: Tarzan, Facts from Sarajevo, Sergeant Rock, obviously, Hawkman, Korak, Weird Worlds, Rima, The Jungle Girl, Ragman. The Tarzan stuff is just incredible. One of the few artist editions I own is of Tarzan, and I think you can get an artist edition of this. He draws the human body like with the ability of no one else. You can see where artists like Neil Adams and say Barry Windsor Smith, someone like that, they've got this. He's got a sort of lean physicality to his characters, which suits this. Which is basically it's a book a bit like, imagine something like Clan of the Cave Bear or Quest for Fire or 1 Million Years Deep BC we mentioned earlier, something like that. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a sort of fantasy caveman comic, I suppose, is the best way to put it. The original series, he's had a number of attempts at it. I don't think it's always been the most popular thing. The first series came out in 1953. There was sort of, I think it was the first 3D comic as well, I've got a feeling. Tall, you know, when you used to wear the silly glasses, a la Doctor Who, blah blah.
That came back a few years ago, didn't it? That sort of old school.
It did for a while, didn't it? Yeah, it definitely did. Yeah. And then it came back for this, the final series, Tor: Prehistoric Odyssey, which I think it was 2008, something like that. It's a caveman, basically, who wanders about in just the bleakest environment, just crossing the world, and he crosses between this sort of monsters and sort of mutant cavemen and Neanderthals and dinosaurs, and he comes across them all, and life is sort of just incredibly cheap. And he gets in fights left, right, and centre, and everyone is sort of scrabbling for an existence and just for their survival. He doesn't speak in this. He doesn't speak at all in it. Everything is in panels about what he might be thinking or what people are thinking with him or what the action is. There's no words in it, no word balloons, put it that way. We never really hear him. We just see reflections of what he's thinking, but more in the action of what he does. The art is just breathtaking, absolutely brilliant, and I go back to it every so often. I chose it for today's subject, really, because I wanted something that had monsters in, and this does, in a probably a slightly different way from what we've been talking about. There's no sort of huge sort of smashing sort of towns type ones. There's, you know, there are sort of underwater sort of tentacled monsters. There's a mohawk fur wearing saber-toothed lion. There's a sort of lurching ape dog human creature thing. There's dinosaurs and mutant crocodiles, albino Neanderthal ape sort of hybrids. Absolutely fucked up in the head type visuals, you know, but done with just such skill. I mean, the geezer is just so skillful. You can see this geezer just sits at a table and he just pours out of his pen onto the page.
Yeah,
you know, just incredible. The ink's done so well. I mean, to be fair, I think he's probably more known for his covers. I'm going to hazard a guess, and somebody will probably hate me for that, but he's probably more known for his covers. And if you go to Facebook, I put a load of his covers up this week of just really striking covers, especially amongst the Tarzan stuff, but more especially amongst the war stuff he did, which is just sort of heartbreakingly, you know, strong stuff. And later on, he got into a bit of history and he talked about what happened in Germany, you know, to Jews during the war and stuff like that. Really, really impactful stuff. It's not long. I think it's only 5 issues. That you can get a hardback of it. I've got the softback here, which wasn't great. It wasn't a huge amount of money. $14.99, which is nothing these days for a trade. And I think you can get the artist edition, which I think is about 90-odd quid, if you really fancy it. But yeah, just breathtakingly good by someone who is an absolute fucking master.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a reason Joe Kubert was a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it makes your day when you meet these people who've been your sort of comics hero for so long, and they're just fucking so nice to you. You know what I mean? And like, you let me take a picture with him and all this sort of thing. Brilliant, brilliant guy. There you go. That's my one.
There you go.
That sounds wicked.
Oh, it's incredible, mate. Yeah, open your eyes to this style. It's a little bit old school, but it's not, you know, when people say, oh, it's from the 50s, 60s, 70s, everyone thinks it's unreadable. This is as fresh as the day is new. You know, this could easily be an image book nowadays. You know, really could be.
Yeah, nice. Dan, do you want to go next?
Yeah, as mentioned earlier in the show, you've got this book as well, Vince. Did you get it especially for the show? Or
kind of. I was thinking, I've been meaning to get it. It's been on the wish list for a long time after Daniel Warren Johnson talked about it on the show. And I've heard nothing but good things about it. It came in the post, and I've started reading it. And I know you were talking about you. I wondered what the book was that you were talking about. You're waiting to be delivered, and it was exactly the same book.
Yeah, it's kind of like, because when we said Big Monsters, I was like, this is the perfect time to get Kaiju Max, by Xander Cannon. And I kind of went into it kind of blind. I didn't know anything about the comic too much, apart from kind of people saying it was really good and rave reviews and stuff. And I didn't realize what it was until kind of gets cracking. And essentially, it's the Kaiju Max comes from the fact that it's an island prison for these great big kaiju monsters, and the wardens and the prison guards are essentially like the Ultraman characters.
Oh, okay.
They walk around like normal humans.
Yeah.
And then when they need to, they can transform into like these 50, 60 foot tall Ultramans, and they kind of police the prison. And it's a real prison drama.
It follows
one of the characters who goes in there straight away. And he's kind of absolutely distraught because he's got kids on the outside who don't know where he is, and he kind of looks after them. And there's like gangs inside the prison who have different lookouts and kind of controlled drugs in and out of the prison. It's essentially like it's kind of like watching Oz.
Yeah.
But
okay, cool.
Kaiju. Like Orange is the New Black meets Pacific Rim. It's that kind of thing.
Right. It's really crazy. Like when one of the kind of the guards is bent, and basically he's sort of given the kaiju like black market stuff, and he plucks into his bag like these two virgin girls. And the ones are great, and sort of like munches them. You're like, fucking hell. So like they're like proper monsters, like horrid. But they're done so kind of like they're very cutesy, and
the artwork
and well done.
It's so colourful and it's beautiful stuff, beautiful line work. And it's certainly, you're on the monsters' side, definitely.
Totally.
I mean, it's like any sort of prison drama. You get the really bloody horrible ones in there. But some of them get beaten. Like
essentially, they're there because they're monsters.
Yeah.
Like this, the main character one. What's his name again? Electrogore. He's not done anything wrong, really. He's only tried to keep himself to himself. But humanity sort of realised that we can't have these monsters kicking around.
He was protecting his kid, I think, because he's more of an underwater monster, isn't he? And he was protecting his kids, and then he got taken halfway through that. So now
it's
so, and you really feel for him because he properly, poor bastard.
Does the classic sort of like, oh, if you do this, and then suddenly he's like under the thumb of one of the biggest, hardest gangs in there. And it's like, oh, fucking hell. But they do, like, there's a workout yard where they're training, and there's like they're lifting like buildings and pushing up like railway cars, like exercise. So it's really like clever little touches.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really well thought out and thought through.
Yeah.
So I ordered two of these books, one because I didn't think it would turn up in time, and the second one should turn up, so I'll redirect that to you, Tony.
Yeah.
You can share that with that.
That'd be brilliant.
He does it, I mean, it's brilliantly done. You can see why that Xander's got so much good word of mouth on it, because it is a character book. Obviously, giant monsters and everything that gets you into the world, but it's such a different kind of world. But he does them like first trade collects like issues 1 to 6, and he calls them seasons, so it is almost like a show in that way.
Right,
and I think there's two books available now. Has the second book come out, Dan? I think
I don't know, actually.
I think it's just
it did pop up out. When I searched for it.
It's
kind of like the concept is so well thought out, like every single facet of the script and plot, what could happen from like the prison environment to now they got translated to this kind of kaiju giant monster environment. It's the parallels are so well done.
Yeah.
And you just see it straight away. I think that's really inventive. It's really well done.
But you look at the cover, I mean, just one look at that cover and it looks, it's going to sound like a backhanded compliment. It looks like it's going to be more fun than it is.
Yeah.
Cause it is a fun read. It's a great book, but it's quite dark, you know. It is a prison drama.
I think the juxtaposition of having these kind of relatively cute, colourful monsters, and then
like that a goat, isn't he?
Monstrous things happening to them.
Yeah, so many good ideas. Yeah. So when Dan said he was going to pick this one, I thought, oh, brilliant. I can read along with him.
Yeah.
Read along with Dan.
There's another section we need. Yeah. It's an only press book as well, so it's nicely put together, isn't it?
Oh, we like this stuff, don't we? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
yeah, so that's a great one. Check that out.
Yeah, Kaiju Max. If you like your giant monsters and you like people getting mashed up in prison...
Yeah. Who doesn't like them?
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair...
Prison brutality.
The greatest prison in a film sequence has got to be Tango and Cash.
Oh.
That's just fantastic.
It's also got the best high five ever recorded.
The best?
Yeah, the best high five. That's just magnificent, that high five. Anyway.
I mean, like, the prisons all run underground fighting rings.
Yeah, because
they seem to, don't they?
Yeah.
This show does. Yeah, Zach doesn't know, but he's got a fight at the end of this.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
To the death. Moving on. I'll tell you now, Susie Gander puts the boot in, doesn't she?
Don't
mean it, Susie. Sorry.
My pick for this week is a book by a creator called Matthew Allison. And it's called Kankor. Now, I discovered the work of Matthew. I wasn't following him on Twitter, but I discovered his work via that age-old classic, which is a retweet of someone else's art.
Excellent. Yeah.
How many times have you followed someone due to something like that?
Yeah, fucking loads of times.
And he had some work in progress of issue 3 of his... Is it issue 2? Oh, I can't remember. One of the things he's working on. And as soon as I looked at that, I thought, oh my God, I need to follow this person. And then when I saw he had a comic with the same sort of art, I needed to get my hands on it. So
I can't look at this because I'm on a lot of medication at the moment. You tried to show me this in order to make me go mad earlier.
Now, yes. How do I describe Kankor? And the other book, he's got 2 books. There's Kankor, and then there's the 4-issue series, which has just started, called Kankor Calamity of Challenge. How can I describe it? It's so many crazy, wonderful, and fantastically gross ideas. It's actually hard for a human brain to comprehend it. Now, the basis of it is there's a main protagonist called Kankor, who's a sort of a faceless, sort of masked, otherworldly cyborg hero that travels through these strange, otherworldly landscapes and grotesque sort of dimensions, fighting all kinds of hideous creatures. Now, that's the simple way of putting it. The book, however, is something sort of otherworldly entirely. I mean, it starts like Calamity of Challenge, which is his new 4-issue series. The first few pages, it starts off in 1999, where there's, as he says in the narration, there's a drunken man child making his way downtown for a rock and roll show. He's the victim of the issue. He calls him a poor sap for Kankor to save, but he might not be worth saving. It feels, as I was reading it felt that slightly autobiographical, like, because this artist, who, by the way, doesn't have any eyes or a nose, and he has a slightly distorted face, and he's walking through a sort of broken down dystopian world, travels to a gig and immediately sort of hates everyone around him. He gets given a flyer for a band called Weird Beard, and he's noticed,
I like them.
He's noticed that the flyer has his drawing on it. So he asks, where did you find this art from? And then someone goes, oh, well, the drummer makes our flyers. So, if you want to come to the show, I'll get you in free and buy you beer. Which immediately makes him really angry. And so you have this almost sort of... And it's all black and white then. And he's in a mosh pit. And then he ends up in a fight, like a really horrible fight. And as he's getting the absolute paste kicked out of him, you see this coloured character just appear out of nowhere, and that's Kankor, who's got a sort of strange galaxy-like constellation on his mask, and the character basically asks him to help, and Kankor then fades through the floor into a strange otherworldly... How many times have I said otherworldly? There's no other way to describe it. This weird dreamlike realm. It's dreamlike. That's why I thought Tony would like it.
Although pulled you over to the dark side. I knew I would.
His brain might melt. Have you looked at any of the pages of this, Tony, yet?
I have, mate. It looks great. It looks incredible.
It's unbelievable because there's lots of pages that have no dialogue or anything. You're just seeing characters sort of, you know, Kankor's fighting these weird creatures, and there's spines and there's folds, and you can see circuitry from his arms like sticking out, and but then weird things will grow out of creatures' faces, or like some bubblish sort of gelatinous mass will just grow out of his face, Matthew throws so many ideas into this. Like, one of the things I loved was you have the headline that says Calamity of Challenge, and then it zooms out and Kankor sort of flies from the distance and like picks up the E from the word challenge and sort of moves it. So it kind of makes it sort of meta. It's so hard to describe. But I can kind of describe the artwork, because that is absolutely stunning. Every page I could stare at for hours. It's very organic. That's, you know, it's a beautiful use of like shadow and shading, but there's weird creatures that are all folded up. There's a Kirby sort of vibe to it as well, because there's a creature that has like a face. His chest and his torso is a face.
Okay. Yeah,
and that's very Kirby like, if you ask me, those sort of.
OMAC, there was a character in OMAC like that, wasn't there?
Yeah. And certainly you've got that sort of the MODOK sort of characters, don't you? Have that kind of.
Yeah, of course.
But then these characters, they're constantly sort of organically moving, and like things are peeling off them, or faces are sort of melting away, or there's like someone's having a fight, and then this large lump of goo sort of lands on a sort of passerby in this world, but the lump of goo sort of covers his head and becomes living, and he sort of says, "This must be a gift from God. This is my test. This is my rebirth." You know, there's lots of strange things going on.
But it's unlike where that goo lands in Silence of the Lambs.
Oh dear. But there's also a wonderful sense of humour as well running through it.
Yeah,
like there's a creature that. He's constantly got bandages over his face, and when he eventually sort of takes the bandages away, one of the characters just replies with "criminy," which is a word that isn't used enough.
And
the character says, "Is it bad?" And his face is, imagine you've chewed a bit of chewing gum for like 2 hours, and it's an absolute mess, and that chewing gum is bleeding. That's what this face is. It's surreal. It's wonderful stuff. The mindset for it brought to mind, like for me, the older sort of days of some of the small press and independent comics, certainly from the US. That whenever I used to look through a Wizard comics or something, the days when Mike Allred wasn't drawing Silver Surfer, but like doing things like Madman and stuff like that. You know,
yeah, okay.
There were people doing real sort of surreal and. You know, proper. It's almost like there's a punk rock sort of aesthetic to it that you wouldn't see on the normal shelves. And this is.
There's a sort of DIY thing going on, yeah.
Yeah. But with a highly professional, and the colour schemes are not over the top, they're muted, but it's very colourful at the same time. It's pure, grotesque comics of the best kind, and I urge everyone to check it out. Naturally, the physical copies that Matthew had on his website are currently sold out, but he's working on making it available digitally. Or you could do like I did, which is add him on Twitter, give him a shout and a few bucks, and get your hands on the PDF, because I literally saw his work and I was like, I need to know how to check this out, because it you know, the original pages, I'd love to get my hands on them. If I had more money, I would get some of them. Because the pen and ink work is just it's the sort of artwork that you can stare at for ages, just trying to figure out. Not you can tell what things are, but just the shapes and the shadows and everything are just mesmerizing. I love it. It's certainly not the sort of comic that I'd normally read, you know. I never lost my way in it. I just loved every page of it. So Now, Kankor and the first issue of Calamity of Challenge come with my highest recommendation. Issue 2 of COC is going to be available on May the 1st, I've seen on his website. So keep your eye out on that. You can follow Matthew at Matthew G. Allison. And you can check out KankorComic.com to see more as well. I think the best way to recommend this is check out Matthew's work. As soon as you see some of his pages, that'll be it then. You'll be sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
Crazy stuff. So, and I
it reminds me of a sort, this sort of underground comics from the 60s element to it as well, isn't there? You know, yeah. That just like, fuck it, we just do what we like. We don't have to follow the rules of anyone else type thing. Which
are,
I really like.
Yeah, there are no rules to this. You've got, you know, monsters that, you know, don't follow any sort of organic structure, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he makes life hard for himself with, like, all of the gears and, you know, wires and things going on with some of the creatures. But it's worth it in the end. Highly recommended.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Cool.
I've been meaning to talk about this for a couple of weeks, actually. So,
yeah.
He was a thoroughly nice chap as well. Whenever I am.
Good.
Yeah, there you go. So that's my one. Zach, what would you like to recommend?
Cool. One that I'd quickly like to recommend, it's like a mini one, is Berserk, which we mentioned earlier, and I know Dan's recommended it in the past, just because it is worth recommending again, because it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just one of the, like, literally one of the greatest comics I've ever read. It's phenomenal.
Oh.
The artwork in it is just insane. The hatching and everything is beautiful. And it's just got just one of the darkest, most disturbing stories, and it sets up this amazing sort of revenge quest. Probably the best part of it is like a really long flashback scene called the Golden Age, where it just tells the backstory of the main character Guts. But it's amazing. If you like monsters, that really is a comic that you should not avoid. It's fantastic.
What one's that, Zach? Sorry, mate.
Berserk.
Sorry.
Kentaro Miura.
I
need to check this out, actually, ever since.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You really would like it.
You'd love it.
Good.
Yeah.
No, did you get to see the three films they done recently, The Golden Age?
Oh, no. Do you know what? I've not seen them yet. Because, I've not gone around to check them. Do they hold up?
They're slightly different to the book in the fact that they've cut out some elements, but it gets all the things right about it. It's really well done.
Oh, cool. Now that sounds wicked. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out.
Definitely check them out. They do the big battle sequences, and they use a bit of CGI. It's a little bit jarring when you first see it, but after a couple of minutes, it's fine.
Cool. Because they've done like a new series, haven't they? I don't know if you saw last summer, they brought out like a new series, but it's all CG, and it looks pretty ropey. Like the whole thing's CG with, you know, cell shading. But
I think a lot of them go for that nowadays because it's just the expense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some of them do it really, really well, but the new Berserk series, like the movies look a lot better, like the ones that you're talking about look really nice, but the new series, some of it is hideous. Nah, very iffy. So that was just one I just wanted to quickly recommend, because I know Dan's gone through it
big fan of that
in the past, but yeah, really, really worth it. Oh, and another little note about that is, I know a lot of people like the Dark Souls video games, and basically Berserk was sort of the inspiration for that series. So people who are into that might want to check out Berserk, because it is world dark gothic sort of medieval fantasy. But very bleak at points. So
it's kind of quick. Now they're strange that kind of like a lot of Westerners do kind of like samurai based comics, but then there's a Japanese creator who's doing a Western based kind of fantasy story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't imagine see so much, but good.
Totally. And it's funny you should say that, because the other thing I wanted to recommend is a similar sort of thing. It's another manga series, and it does feature some giant monsters, but not as the main sort of focus. And that is One Piece, which it's hugely popular around the world, but I don't know how many sort of your listeners would have.
I've
checked
heard
it out.
This one.
It's
one of those ones, like when I was younger, I used to see it, like the anime advertised on TV, and I used to think it looked awful, because I used to love Dragon Ball, and I saw the look of it, and I just thought, it just looks like a kind of ugly Dragon Ball ripoff about pirates. and with powers. And I just I really didn't like the look of it at all. And I kept hearing people talk about it and say how great it was. And eventually I just caved and thought I'd check it out. And honestly, now it's like, I look forward to it every week. I'm just like gagging for the next episode of it. It's phenomenally good. It's been going for like 80 volumes now. Or 84 volumes, I think it's up to. It's been going since 1997, pretty much weekly, 20 pages a week since 97. They have the odd break every now and then, but the guy who does it, I don't know how to pronounce his name exactly, but I'm going to give it a shot. I think it's Eiichiro Oda. But he's that guy.
Than we would.
But he's that guy who you might have seen a couple of years ago was floating around this schedule of a manga creator that is ludicrous. Yes. He gets 2 hours sleep, and that is this guy. He says he sleeps like 2 hours a night,
and
I think
it
is.
Down, like, what he's given to like assistants, because there are like teams, aren't there, of like people working on it, and the hours he does. Oh, it's insane.
Yeah. I couldn't do 2 hours a night. Fucking hell.
No way.
We're lucky in this country if people do 2 hours work a day.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but yeah, he apparently, like most manga creators, will let their assistants do an awful lot of the work, but apparently he insists on drawing all the characters himself, which is very rare apparently. So his assistants only work on like background and sort of effects and stuff like that. So he draws all the characters, which in some of the scenes would, I don't know, drive most people mental. But the main thrust of the series, it's about this kid called Luffy. Who eats this special fruit called a devil fruit, and then gains elastic powers. So his body has the properties of elasticity, and there's all these different devil fruit which grant different powers to people, but at the expense of them being able to swim. But he's always dreamed of becoming the king of the pirates. And the way it starts off, it feels quite twee, and it's like, oh right, okay, it doesn't really feel like it's heading anywhere, but over time, like by the time you reach probably the 10th volume, which I know is quite a big ask, it really sort of kicks in a real emotional moment, and the fighting and the battles and stuff really ramp up.
You're beyond invested at that point as well, though, aren't you? Really?
Exactly. Yeah. Honestly, this guy's, he's just so creative when it comes to action scenes and fight scenes and things. I've really not seen many people who can match what he does. It's really cartoony sort of style, and like the early stuff feels very almost Disney inspired, like Disney meets manga. But as it gets further along, it kind of changes a bit, like further away from the Disney stuff. But the way he does action and the way he uses like the elasticity of the main character to really sort of sell the sort of snap of a punch. He'll kind of stretch his arm back and sort of snap forward into an opponent and stuff. It's mad. It's really so well done. I think
is he the guy that has a sort of wears a hat and he's got like a Hawaiian shirt on that you always see
the one
cosplaying as?
That's the guy. But what I love the most about it is that there's this ridiculous sort of spirit of adventure in it, where you kind of hear, you know, these characters talking about some, like really early on in the series, you hear some of the naval officers who are trying to capture the pirates. They'll talk about this place called Impel Down, and it's sort of, you know, you think, oh, you'll never hear anything about it again. And then about like 10 years later, the characters storm Impel Down and stuff, and it feels like there's so much to it that's, he's sown so many seeds of story really, really early on that you think probably won't ever be remembered or go anywhere. But it all kind of comes back and it all ties together. And you can tell he really is working towards some big sort of epic conclusion. It's nuts. And it's really daft as well in places. It's just bizarre, zany. And some of it's really stupid, but it's, it's, action scenes are fantastic, and some of the emotional moments are like really genuinely yank at your heartstrings. It's really sort of surprising. It's not what you'd expect if you look at the covers in the bookstore. But seeing as there's 80 volumes, it's quite an off-putting amount. But I know quite a lot of libraries have them. So I know you can order them in at libraries and things like that, and they'll hopefully be able to get them in from other branches if they don't have them in that specific one. So I know that's quite a good and cheap way of reading them.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good recommendation to do that as well.
Yeah, good shout, Matt. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice one.
So there you go.
Very good.
One absolutely fantastic episode. Full of chuckles, comics, and more. What more do you want with the week?
Yeah.
And also, that's quite a collection of recommendations, I think, we got this week.
Yeah, quite widespread there, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like a widespread? There's several different ways you can dance. I mean, if there's anything on this show that you want to bring up, or if you want to recommend to us to talk about on the show, you can let us know on the email awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, any events, etc. that we need to know about, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Thank you for all the comics and everything that have been sent in, whether comics, press release, or whatever. We're trying to get through them, and we've got some absolutely amazing ones sent through recently. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you like a good natter about comics, and if you want to talk about what we've, you know, have you heard something on this episode that you want to discuss more, then join the group Awesome Comics Talk.
It's going down well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've just really remembered the shout out I was supposed to fucking say.
Oh, okay.
About the graphic for the show.
Oh, yes.
You essentially work on another graphic where we have like the ACP logo in the center, and then we want like a spread of characters jumping out from behind it. So we're looking at people sending in like a high res image of one of their creator owned characters jumping out, and we'll kind of make it into a. We're putting more together and make out an image out of it. And it's essentially used to promote the podcast and maybe put on a bit of merchandise to help sort of pay for the various fees that are paid out for the show.
If you check out the group, Dan put a post on there showing what you mean, don't you, Dan?
Yeah.
There's a load of people up for it as well, aren't there?
Yeah, just getting the numbers at the moment. But if you're interested, put your name down, and then I'll get the technical specs up this week and we can start pushing forward with that.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah,
it's going to be good fun. And there's been some great threads up. One of my favourite ones was one that Sam Webster put up about working spaces for artists, etc.
It's had like 90 replies or something, isn't it?
Yeah. I still haven't replied to that. I've just organised my drawing area, actually. I've got a new desk and everything, so I can't wait to post a picture going, oh, look at my desk. And when it looks clean before I do all the drawing on it and absolutely just...
Yeah, move that packet of crisps you left on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I once should have done the classic put like pornography on the screen and post a picture of the desk.
Hang on a second.
A lot of listeners were really good with... they put the Awesome Comics podcast on it.
Yeah.
Oh, did they? Oh, good.
Yeah.
If there was a laptop or anything, there was an Awesome Pod logo there somewhere. So, yeah, thank you very much to everyone who gets involved on the Awesome Comics Talk. And it is a place for talk. So, not necessarily the hard sell.
Yes. We had a little incident, which was forgiven.
Yeah.
If you've got a podcast, we'll ask us if you can advertise it. Don't just keep advertising it on our podcast page. But, I think we got over it. Yeah.
I mean, there is a lot of pages that are essentially all about promoting stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of the activity is just about kind of reposting links. It's good to kind of get involved in just conversation and not have too many promotional stuff.
Yeah, if you want to ask us advice about a Kickstarter, you know, I've got this Kickstarter. What do you think about it? It's a good way to promote it? Then we're more than happy to help you with that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I go on these Facebook pages to post up about the new episodes every week, so I understand about getting the word out. But like Tony said, let's make it a bit more interactive. If you want us to help you out in any way, get in touch and get on the group. And thank you very much for listening to this week's episode. It's a real good fun. And thank you very much, Zach, for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, cheers, Zach.
It's been really good, Zach. Yeah. We look forward to this one for a while.
Yeah. Oh, cheers, guys. No, it's been a pleasure to be here. Mate, did you want to do that competition as well, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
It's brilliant. We have a guest on, and like, he's more professional than us.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Every week.
Yeah, before we finally sign off, we have a competition this week with it. And Zach's very kindly offering up some prizes.
Yeah.
Are we going to do a question? Zach, have you got a question for the listeners? Do you want to tell people what you're willing to cough up for their lovely, loyal ears?
Sure, yeah. Just issues 1, 2, and 3 of Monstrosity, the physical ones. And I'll do like an original drawing as well, like Monstrosity drawing as well. Although I'd like to say probably best available to UK listeners only, because otherwise the overseas packaging.
Yeah. Very wise.
Sorry to our listeners in Kuala Lumpur.
You know who you are. Mm.
So now all you have to do is, it's just going to be a question, isn't it? Answer a question, and if you send the answer to awesomecomicspod awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, we'll put all the correct answers in a hat, and then we'll organise with Zach to get the correct, get those goodies sent out to you. But Zach, do you have a question for the people?
Oh mate, I've not thought of one.
I've got one.
Right, here we go. Hey. What is it?
Do you want me to say my one? Yeah. Previously in the show, who did Zach say was his favourite monster out of King Kong or Godzilla? Is that too easy?
That's like half an hour ago. Who would have forgotten
that? I just made sure that someone who's listened to the show actually gets the prize as opposed to...
Oh, that's very true. How about this one? When it came to places to see a giant monster story, what was the city that was named? Does that make sense?
Yeah. There were several, wasn't there?
No, in the poll, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the answers to the poll was a specific city name. What was it?
Yep.
Yeah, do you think that's
right? That's a good one.
I think we pulled out of our ass quite well.
What is Mechagodzilla's junk like?
It's got a spinning attachment.
What is the circumference of King Kong's tackle?
Are we including ball bag into that?
I don't know. Zach, it's your competition. Do we include the ball bag?
Of course. Yeah. It's all operates together.
Thank you. Thank you. Spoken like a true man, like these two.
Right, so
good.
There's a question. Email your answers to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. And thank you very much, Zach, for the competition prizes.
Yes, brilliant.
My pleasure.
You are a very kind gentleman indeed. And you lot out there are very kind for listening to us. Hopefully you've had a good start to the week with us blathering in your ears for a good couple of hours. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes or Stitcher or Podnose, wherever you heard us, if you've got a chance to leave a review, leave us a review. We love you, and we want to know that you love us. Please, this isn't a one-way relationship.
Yeah.
I was waiting for someone else to say anything, and they just left me hanging.
Yeah.
Jesus, it's that time of night. So thank you very much for listening. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony.
Ezohyz on Twitter. John Freeman, myself, and Dave Broughton are working on a little series of our illustrated articles down the tubes about easy ways to buy comics or not so easy ways. So pop over in that, because John and especially David are absolutely pulling out their hats around that lovely stuff. Or if you go to neverironanything.blogspot.com, you'll see some of my vitriol and bile on there. So, thank you. There you go.
Beautiful. Dan.
I'm on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Nicely done. I couldn't get the intro out earlier, so I can't have a go at you, can I? You can follow me on Twitter @JesterDiablo, and you can find out more about my comic at TheRedMaskFromMars.com. And Zach, where can people find you and your work?
Cool. My website is just ZachSimmonsHearn.co.uk. On my Twitter is @MonstrousComics. I think that's the same for my Instagram as well.
That's cool.
Monstrous Comics. You can see why we got him on for this episode.
Yes.
And we'll have you back on, so you've been an absolute gent.
Definitely.
I'd
love to.
There you go. And people have been wonderful as well. We hope you have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. We won't announce what the next genre will be yet, but stay tuned to the Twitter and Facebook. It is a good one. Oh, this month's going to be so much fun. So much fun.
Well, kind of.
So have a brilliant week, and as always, stay fruity, stay healthy, and stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
One dude just he remembers the entire country's tax business and concerns in his head, and sometimes he can just slip through. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah. About that time I murdered and that bloke. I just hope they're scared about it.
Forget about it.
Hashtag murder